Case number 14-7042, Barbara Fox, appellant, Hamilton P. Fox III versus Government of the District of Columbia et al. Mr. Fox for the appellant, Mr. McKay for the appellees.
Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Caleb Fox, and I represent the appellant, Barbara R. Fox. May it please the court. Your Honors, we're here today because the district court erroneously granted judgment on the pleadings against Mrs. Fox by finding that Officer Boyd was entitled to qualified immunity for his mistreatment of Mrs. Fox on December 20th, 2008. In reaching its ruling, Judge Jackson found that Officer Squire's original stop of Mr. Fox was reasonable, and therefore Officer Boyd's subsequent treatment of Mrs. Fox was also reasonable. However, the district court erred in overlooking certain key facts, particularly the fact that Officer Squires had more than 15 minutes while Mr. Fox was waiting on the sidewalk to issue Mr. Fox a parking ticket.
Assume all that's correct. With reference to her claim, what is it that the officer did that is so clearly a violation of her constitutional rights that there isn't a qualified immunity?
Your Honor, Officer Boyd, in ordering Mrs. Fox to get out of the vehicle and place her hands on the hood of the car, was a clear violation of her Fourth Amendment right against illegal seizure.
There was a scene that perhaps began unwisely on the officer's part, but by this time he has a person that he is having a custodial type confrontation with, her husband, and she's making a fuss in the car. Can't the officer ask the passenger or tell the passenger to get out and...
No, Your Honor, not if
that's
the...
That's a clear violation of constitutional rights?
If the original stop was unconstitutional...
The original stop has already occurred. The officer has what he has at this point. That doesn't taint everything he does and that on the rest of his life. I mean, there's something has to be, her right has to be violated in a way that is a clear violation of constitutional rights to survive qualified immunity, doesn't it?
That's right, Your Honor. And in this
what
case...
What is it that he did to her that constituted such a clear violation?
He ordered her out of the car, ordered her to place her hands on the hood of the car in violation.
Didn't I just ask you, isn't that something that cops can do, officers can do?
Not during an unlawful arrest, Your Honor. If the original stop is unreasonable, then any subsequent actions that an officer may take to secure a scene is also unreasonable.
I don't know that that follows, counsel. Is that really a statement here? That once the officer has the scene, it has to be secured, then. However it got created.
I respectfully disagree, Your Honor. If the original stop is unreasonable, that does not then allow a police officer to violate anybody's rights.
Well, she was sitting there with a gun in her lap.
She was not,
Your Honor. Put the gun down?
But there was no
evidence. I'm not asking you what there was. I'm saying suppose there was a gun in her lap.
Well, yes, Your Honor, but I think that's factually very different from the case at hand.
No doubt it's very different. It's what we call a hypothetical.
Yes, sir.
But if you're saying that it taints everything after the original stop, that nothing he does after that can be reasonable, wouldn't it cover that hypothetical?
I believe that the facts in that hypothetical are so different from the facts in the case here that it's not particularly applicable.
So clearly different. In what legal way?
Well,
it would make a difference in the qualified immunity question.
Well, the officer Boyd pulled Mrs. Fox out of the car and ordered her to place her hands on the hood of the car without any evidence in the pleaded facts that suggests that Mrs. Fox was a security risk to any of the officers on the scene. Simply, Mrs. Fox was asking questions about why her husband was being unlawfully arrested, and the officers rudely threatened to arrest her and forced her to place her hands on the hood of the car and get out of the car in violation of her rights.
So it's your point that the arrest was clearly unconstitutional?
Yes, ma'am.
And so the normal powers that police officers enjoy in executing arrests don't apply when the arrest itself is clearly unconstitutional?
That's right. When the arrest is not supported by probable cause or reasonable suspicion, then the subsequent treatment, in this case the seizure of Mrs. Fox and the seizure of Mr. Fox, were also unconstitutional.
Is there... Go ahead.
Well, Mr. Fox's case is not before.
Yes, Your Honor.
That's over, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
There was a judgment entered against the government for $80,000.
Was the government... Just a quick question about that judgment process. Was the government a party to that application? Did they file anything?
The judgment was offered by the government to Mr. Fox, and he accepted it.
It's my confusion. The exoneration proceeding or whatever it was called where they found
right.
he was clearly
they
innocent
found
of disorderly conduct?
That's right. The government did not oppose Mr. Fox in those
But the government was a party to that proceeding? It wasn't just an ex parte. Surely
it's a settlement, right?
No, there are two things.
Yeah.
No, there are two. This is separate from the settlement. This was
you're talking about
where he was exonerated from of his disorderly conduct.
Right. The government, to my knowledge, did not oppose it. I believe that they were entitled to oppose it and did not oppose it at that time.
Did they file anything in that you know of? Or?
I'm honestly not sure whether they did or not, but I don't believe they opposed it. I don't believe they consented to it either. But I don't think they filed any papers mm-hmm. that presented arguments as to why. His arrest should not be expunged.
So the government's argument is, first, that Mr. Fox was illegally parked.
Yes.
And he asked to speak to a supervisor.
Yes, Your Honor.
So at that point, are you contesting that there was a traffic violation?
Not necessarily, Your Honor.
All right. So there was a traffic violation. Then Officer Boyd joined Officer Squires.
Correct. After Officer Squires stopped Mr. Fox from leaving, yes.
In a hypothetical situation, if once Mr. Boyd and whoever the other supervisor
Spires was just the officer. Right, the
Boyd
supervisor.
Was just the police officer. But there was a supervisor on the scene.
Eventually, a supervisor
he
arrived.
He came with Boyd, or around the same time?
Yes, ma'am.
In any event, since there had been a traffic violation, the officer could have issued the citation, and if Mrs. Fox had continued to question, is it your position that then the officer would not have had, under Supreme Court precedent that you cite, the authority to ask her to get out of the car?
Well, I think under that hypothetical, the officer would have that authority, but I think that hypothetical does not take into account Officer Squire's lack of diligence in not issuing the ticket in the ample time he had.
Mr. Fox had asked to see a supervisor, speak to a supervisor.
Yes,
and presumably, I mean, this is speculation on my part, the supervisor might have said to Squires, let it go.
All right,
so they were waiting to see what was going to happen.
That's right. But Mr. Fox then elected to leave, and Officer Squires stopped him from doing that in contravention of his order to move the car in the first place.
Right. So I just need to be clear here. There's a clear parking violation under the traffic laws.
I think that's true, yes.
All right. And according to the findings that we have, Mrs. Fox kept asking Boyd what was going on with regard to her husband.
That's right, and because they were...
Part of your argument is Boyd created the tension in Mrs. Fox.
Yes.
That created the whole situation that caused him to ask her to get out of the car.
That's correct. His rude treatment of her while she was asking questions as to why her husband was being unlawfully arrested, certainly contributed and was the direct contributing factor to her.
Well, she asked what was going on. Isn't that right? What are you doing to my husband?
She initially tried to get out of the car.
But did she challenge whether the arrest was lawful?
She was not even able to do that because every time
she
asked a question, she was told to shut up.
I understand, but she wasn't asking why her husband was being illegally arrested. She was just asking what were they doing, correct?
Well, the actual only words that she was able to ask was, yes, what is going on?
So the district court took the position that because there was evidence that Mrs. Fox had become emotional, that in order to allow the processing of Mr. Fox to continue without any further interruption, that was a reasonable direction for Mrs. Fox to get out of the car.
That's what the district court found, yes.
And you don't disagree with any of those factual findings?
No, we don't.
And that it was a minor intrusion to order her to put her hands on the car?
Certainly a minor intrusion as compared to other illegal seizures, yes. But an intrusion, regardless of how level, is unconstitutional regardless of how severe the intrusion may be.
This is a fruit of the poisonous tree argument you're making almost, right? Which I didn't see in your brief in that quite those terms, but let's ignore that for a moment. So your point here is that it is clearly established that an officer, where there has been a violation of the traffic laws, and a passenger, from the officer's point of view, has created a situation where the officer determines he should tell her to get out of the car and put her hands on the car, that it's clearly established that that was a violation of her constitutional rights under the Fourth Amendment?
Yes, Your Honor.
In what case can we look to for that?
I think Sharp is the most important case.
Sharp?
Yes, United States versus Sharp, which addresses the need for an officer to diligently pursue his investigations during an investigatory or traffic stop,
right,
which
well,
Officer Squires did not do.
That's the argument that the government said you didn't raise in your opening brief, and now you raise it in your reply brief. And you say, well, you know, you cited cases in your opening brief, but you really didn't make this argument. But let's assume that's not a problem. Mr. Fox asked to speak to a supervisor.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So isn't the delay explained by that?
Well, it's partially explained by that, but I think Officer Squires' subsequent conduct in refusing to allow Mr. Fox to comply with his original order to move the car and to hold him there for no reason other than to harass him strongly suggests that Officer Squires had no intention of issuing a parking ticket, and certainly the 15-minute time window that he had gave him ample time to issue a parking ticket and resolve the situation.
Well, I know you have this abandonment argument, but I don't know. I understand your argument about he couldn't both stand on the sidewalk and move the car.
Yes.
But I don't know where this abandonment comes from.
Well, the order to move the car was rescinded by Officer Squires when he instructed Mr. Fox to stand on the sidewalk and wait. He couldn't move
but
the car and stand.
He didn't say, I guess my scenario, as I read the facts here, is that Mr. Fox wanted to speak to a supervisor.
Yes.
And they were waiting for the supervisor to get there.
And
then when Mr. Fox tried to leave, Squires told him to stop.
Right, which there's no, we cannot find any legally justifiable reason for that. There's no, to our knowledge, there's nothing in the police handbook that says once a citizen requests to speak to a supervising officer, he or she has to remain there until that officer arrives. And the fact that Officer Squires...
Now after he's called his supervisor and said, please come down here, he's supposed to stand there and then be ready to say, well, super, got you here for no reason. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I mean, that's a matter more for internal police politics. That doesn't rise to a constitutional level.
Hang on. Do we know? I mean, this is a dismissal on the pleadings. Do we know, is it in your complaint, that Officer Squires actually asked for a supervisor? Because it seems like instead of a supervisor, a swarm of police officers...
That's
showed
correct.
Up, and all I read was that someone said you wanted an official. I'm an official. I didn't see any complaint that said he called for a supervisor, actually called for a supervisor, or that a supervisor actually showed up.
Well, that is correct, Your Honor. The only after Mr. Fox was placed in handcuffs, a police officer did arrive and claimed to be an official.
Well, they're all officials.
That's right. But then said that I guess it's too late because Mr. Fox had already been unlawfully arrested. Certainly, there's a question of fact on that as to whether or not.
Well, that's what I was curious about. It seems like there's a lot of, at least on a constitutional question, a lot of facts missing as to what Officer Squires did, why
if a police officer asks for a supervisor at a traffic stop, a swarm of other police officers show up, and no one's ever been identified as a supervisor.
That's right.
In this record, do we know how much time elapsed from the very beginning of this whole incident until the very end when Ms. Fox left?
The pleaded facts say there was at least 15 minutes while Mr. Fox waited on the sidewalk. There is no specific time noted in the complaint that says how long after Officer Squire subsequently stopped Mr. Fox from leaving the other officers arrived. This case is kind of unique, Your Honors, in that because Mr. Fox's case went forward, there has been discovery developed in this case.
But that's not in this record.
But not in this record. That's right. So Mr. McKay and I both know sort of what the timing was, but as far as what the district court knew as under the pleaded facts, it's fairly unclear, and there's certainly a question of fact that should have been viewed in a light more favorable to Mrs. Fox Officer Boyd.
I take it on the pleadings here, there's no evidence that Squires ever did a single step in the course of issuing a parking citation until, I guess there's some debate about whether it was before or after at the police station, but yeah, between the initial move the car and putting on the handcuffs, I take it there's at least no assertion in your complaint of any, or their answer of anything he did to initiate a traffic citation?
That's correct, Your Honor. There was no mention of a parking citation apart from the original dispute over the meaning of a part of the parking signs, and certainly Mr. Fox did not receive a parking ticket on the scene. He received the parking ticket
And something can start as a lawful traffic stop and then, by the nature of its terms, turn into an unconstitutional stop. I'm not saying that's what happened here, but that could certainly happen in the law. That's pretty well established.
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. All right. Why don't we hear from counsel for...
Thank you very much, Governor.
May it please the Court, I'm James McKay, and I represent Officer Boyd. Let me just say this. Officer Boyd's detention was a very minor intrusion. He did not have any physical contact with her.
Did you say his intention?
His actions, contact toward Mrs. Fox was a minor intrusion. He did not pull her out of the car. He did not touch her. He did not have any physical contact.
But he had no authority to do anything. This is just asking the question. If he had no authority, an officer could come up to me driving into work and say, get out of the car and put your hands on the hood, and that would be just as factually minor. But if they had absolutely no authority whatsoever to order me to do that, that would be unconstitutional, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
So really this turns on the question of what constitutional authority, if any, he had. But two things. First, was there constitutional authority, and was it clearly established that he lacked constitutional authority, right?
Yes, Your Honor. It has to be judged from the perspective of a reasonable officer in Officer Boyd's position. He came after this incident with Officer Squires was over, and he basically had the authority to, a reasonable officer would have come and realized that there was an illegally parked car and in violation of the district's traffic regulations.
That? Because I know originally he'd been by the sign, but then he started to pull away at some point before Officer Boyd showed up.
Yes.
And then was stopped again, but we don't know anything in this record at least where the car was at that point, do we?
Well, the Officer Boyd clearly came after the car was stopped, so the car was stopped and...
But we don't know where the car was stopped a second time, right?
I don't think it moved.
Well, the complaint says that he started to pull away. Now, I don't know whether that means an inch or a few feet or a couple yards or what other signs were on the street. It could very well be right. I'm just saying we got a decision here on the pleadings. So where do the pleadings tell us where the car was?
Well, there's no indication that he moved the car. He started to go away, but he was stopped. And there's no indication that it was not illegally parked.
But there's no indication one way or other after. I think we know from the complaint when Officer Squires made the stop, he was parked somewhere in that area where there was the debated parking but didn't say standing sign. And then we don't know from this record exactly where he was and then how much the car. I'm just asking you a question.
Well, Your Honor, the complaint makes it clear that to one side, there was no parking at any time. Mm-hmm. The other side, it was no parking, commercial vehicles only, and he was during an hour where that was prohibited. So it's clear from the complaint that he hasn't moved it out into a legal parking place.
No. Where
because
do we know
the
that?
Description of the place where he originally parked was no parking either way.
Well, did it say how long the no park? I mean, there's plenty of city blocks where there's, you know, you're shaking your head. I'm just telling you this is a fact question.
Well, it
there's
is.
There's plenty of city blocks where there's a portion of it that you can't park, and then right next to it is the parking areas.
Well,
that's commonly loading zones.
There's no indication. It was very clear from the complaint that there was no parking either way. And there was no indication in the complaint there was any place he could have parked legally. It was purely one way. There's no parking at any time. The other place was no parking except commercial vehicles, and that's where he was.
For the entire block? I didn't read that from the complaint. I mean, well, I thought there was an area outside the CVS or whatever it was.
Right.
Did it say what the distance of the no parking restrictions was?
Well, the complaint said there was no parking. I think it was to the east, there was no parking at any time, and to the west, there was no parking except commercial vehicles. And that was the complaint.
I think we're going in circles here. What I'm asking is, do we know what the length of those parking restrictions were? And I guess
well,
we
you
don't
know,
the record. The answer
is temporal length.
Not the temporal. No. The geographic. Was it? Was it the entire? We don't know, right?
Well, it was the entire area
the entire
in front of him on that side of the street, as far as we know from the complaint. In any case, it's Officer Boyd you have to look at. He came to the scene, and he had no basis to second guess Officer Squire's, determination that he was illegally parked and that he was given a citation, which happened right on the scene. If you look at paragraph 48-49 of the complaint, he was given a. For one thing, I just wanted to point out that.
I'm sorry. Hang on. I just want to understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
You're saying 48-49.
Two things I just want to mention about the complaint. Mm-hmm. One is. Paragraphs 31, 32 on page 8.
Let's be clear. 48 and 49 don't tell us time.
No, they.
And what we've really been talking about is paragraphs 31 through 33.
Yeah, 31.
Mr. Fox is incredulous. Then he stood there for 15 minutes.
Well, then he asked for a supervisor, and the officer said he can wait for a supervisor. At this point, though, he's voluntarily standing on the sidewalk waiting for his wife, who was in the store at the time, to come out.
I don't see all that.
Well, I mean,
what I see is paragraph 33.
Yes.
All right, and the inference to be drawn there is that Mr. Fox had gotten back into his car, and it says, quote, so he got back into his vehicle to start it to leave. However, Officer Squires activated his siren, and Mr. Fox stopped.
Yes.
Then Mr. Fox got out and walked to Squires' vehicle.
Yes.
All right. So there are several inferences that can be drawn, and you heard counsel say Mrs. Fox is entitled to a reasonable inference.
I'm sorry, I just couldn't hear you.
Hmm? Couldn't hear me?
No, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. That you heard counsel for Mrs. Fox say that the inferences should be drawn in Mrs. Fox's favor here.
Well, it has to be plausible, though. You have to have a plausible basis for liability, and you just can't say it's merely possible. And that's all it says here. You have no plausible under the, Iqbal Twombly cases. You just haven't met that threshold standard with this pleading of showing that you have a good case of the clearly established violation. And we cited a number of circuit decisions, the four that say parking offenses justifies a Terry's stop, the Third Circuit case saying
But every one of those says a lawful traffic stop or a lawful arrest allows you to control the scene during the arrest. A lawful traffic stop allows you to order people out of the car. And so if it was unlawful, then there would be a Fourth Amendment violation. Now, then you have to ask the separate question, was it
clearly and unlawful, that we would get past qualified immunity. But I want to make sure we're being very careful here, because I think some of the briefings seem to assume that as long as there's a traffic stop at some point, officers can do whatever they want and order people in and out, in and out, in and out, which I don't think is the law at all under the Fourth Amendment.
Well, Your Honor, right, but there has to be a lawful traffic stop. But here, there was, I think there's really no dispute anymore that he was parked in violation of the traffic regulations. Now, this court has not directly decided whether a parking violation justifies a Terry stop, but there's no other case in the circuit, any of the circuits, to the contrary, and you can't just say generally, cite general statements about the Fourth Amendment. The Supreme Court in the Ashcroft v. Al-Kid made it clear that you have to show the particular conduct of the officer violates the right to show the clearly established element, and the burden is on the plaintiff to show that a clearly established right was violated by allegations that are plausible, that we could plausibly conclude established a Fourth Amendment right,
well,
and it certainly doesn't happen here. Pardon me?
I understand those legal standards, but the Supreme Court has made it very clear that you have to apply them in a specific factual context.
Yes.
So we're looking at the complaint, and what it says is that Mrs. Fox complied with every instruction she was given, and that all Officer Boyd knew when he got to the scene was that Squires said Mr. Fox had an attitude problem.
Yes.
Mrs. Fox asked Officer Boyd what's happening, and he tells her to shut up and threatens her with arrest.
Well, he didn't arrest her.
No, but threatens her.
Well, yes, Your Honor, that was not probably the best way to handle it. I agree.
Not probably the best.
No.
I assume you would have stronger language than that.
No one covered themselves with glory at the
Right.
But it wasn't
her. No, I'm trying to get to the facts of this case. All right? Judge Millett's questions were getting to, are there a lot of factual issues that need to be resolved as opposed to a judgment on the pleadings?
Well,
so if we're talking about what a reasonable officer did, and we're only looking at the complaint, was it reasonable for this officer to proceed as he did? And are the facts of this complaint under Twombly and Iqbal to be viewed favorably to Mrs. Fox?
Well,
that's my question.
Yes, Your Honor, that is the question. And we've stated, the allegations of complaint do not establish plausibly that Officer Boyd violated clearly established rights of Mrs. Fox in the very minor intrusion. No physical contact, just get out of your car, put your hands in the hoods where I can see them. I mean, look at the Maryland v. Wilson case. I mean, in that case, the only reason the officer had was, well, the passenger looked nervous, and that was enough to justify.
Yeah, but the difference here.
Go ahead.
The difference here is Maryland said you can order someone who's already in out. But here the police had already ordered her in and then ordered her out. And first they ordered her in.
Yes.
So they did their Maryland versus Wilson, ordered her in the car. And then because she was crying and asking questions, according to the complaint, right, they ordered her back out. Now, I assume your position isn't that Maryland versus Wilson allows police officers to treat people like Jack in the Box and order them in, out. At some point, he's exercising control over her that's way beyond simply a Maryland versus Wilson one-time exit for safety.
Well, Your Honor, we agree. There have to be constraints on police officers, but here there are very articulable facts that the police officer was confronted. He was trying to control the scene. That's what he wanted to do.
From the allegations of the complaint, was he there when she was ordered into the vehicle?
Yes.
The Sergeant Boyd there at that time.
Well, yes.
He was there when she was ordered into the vehicle.
They're both police officers, all right? Well, there's no supervisor on the scene.
Well, he didn't describe this sergeant.
No, he wasn't a sergeant. No.
There's a footnote saying that was a mistake.
I don't read footnotes.
Yeah.
Everybody you know, realizes he's an officer, not a sergeant. And they both were participating in the arrest, Spires and Boyd, of Mr. Fox, and allegation of the complaint number 22. And the officer Boyd was trying to control the scene. She four times asked what was happening.
Well, the point is, though, reading the complaint, the scene was under control until Officer Boyd's conduct created the problem. That's the inference from the complaint.
I don't think the complaint shows that, because she had gotten out of the car, and the officer boy said, please get back in the car, or get back in the car. I don't know how he said it, but and she got back, and
no
then
fees.
She
I
kept
think
asking.
Stipulate that.
And then, you know, he did tell her to shut up, which was not a good thing for a police officer to tell a citizen. I agree. And then she started crying, and here he's trying to assist Officer Squires in arresting Mr. Fox.
Right.
And
that's your issue, okay?
Yeah.
The traffic stop stuff, let's assume that's all at least within the bounds of not clearly unconstitutional. But the order out was in conjunction with what I hope you will admit was a clearly unconstitutional arrest. Not a seizure, but it was part of a clearly unconstitutional arrest of Mr. Fox.
No, I think it was perfectly constitutional.
Constitutional arrest of Mr. Fox.
Yes.
What was he doing?
He failed to obey the reasonable instruction of Officer Squires to move his car. That is
a criminal offense. Mr. Squires told him, asked him to move it. He went back and he said, stand on the sidewalk. And then when he got in the car to move it, Officer Squires said, stop. You can't mean when you've got three different directions from a police officer that you get to be arrested for choosing to do the last two things he said you could do.
Well Officer
really?
Boyd came to the scene after it had happened, and the failure to obey had already occurred. That was an offense that had been established, but you don't really need to get to the legality of Mr. Fox's arrest.
He tried to move the car and was told to stop. Did he obey that?
Well, he did obey that.
He said, wait on the sidewalk. Did he obey that?
He did.
Yes, he did. Okay, so what basis did Officer Boyd have to think there was any reason to arrest him for failing to obey an order?
He failed to obey the initial order to move
Boyd
his car.
Boyd wasn't there for the initial order to move
Pardon
the car.
Me?
Boyd wasn't there when the initial order to move the car occurred. And Boyd, under collective knowledge, is charged with knowledge that Squires made two subsequent orders that told him to not move the car and to stay on the sidewalk.
Well, even if
that can't, you can't really seriously mean that.
Yes, I. Well, the recent case of the Supreme Court in Mayan, I guess, the North Carolina, establishes that, you know, there could be a mistake about the law, but nevertheless, if it's a reasonable mistake, then it's still a constitutional.
Well, where did your answer allege a reasonable mistake of law for qualified immunity?
Well, it's a recent case. I did inform counsel that we might mention it, but it's the.
I'm aware of what the Hine case held.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how on earth that helps you when you have Officer Squires making two subsequent orders that were completely obeyed, and forbidding him to comply with the first order. What is the basis for the arrest?
Your Honor, the violation had occurred, and, you know, whether or not it was, you know, you take away the violation, that's an interesting question. But the point is that Officer Boyd didn't.
What reasonable basis did Officer Boyd have to think that he could arrest Mr. Fox at the time he arrested him?
Well, Your Honor, I think the reasonable basis is a failure to obey a reasonable officer of order of Officer Squires. But you don't really need to get
without
into the legality.
Without him ever having heard that order? He never heard any order.
Well,
all right.
Under the collective
knowledge. It's multiple choice, right?
Knowledge,
so
under the
three,
collective knowledge
you
doctrine, you have to get to the point that Officer Boyd should have realized that Officer Squires ordered Mr. Fox to move his car. Mr. Fox refused. That was the whole reason why Mr. Fox asked for Officer Squires to call the supervisor, because he thought wrongly that he wasn't illegally parked. But you don't have to get into the legality of Mr. Fox's arrest. It's enough from the point of view of Officer Boyd, who came to the scene after all this had happened, that he had no reason to second-guess Officer Squires' decision that there was probable cause to arrest Mr. Fox.
Arrest? Wait.
Officer Squires never thought there was probable cause to arrest for a civil parking violation.
He wasn't arrested for a civil parking violation. Now, it's true he was arrested for disorderly conduct, but we mentioned in our, pleading judgment or the pleadings that there was a perfectly valid ground for Officer Squires to arrest, a failure to disobey an order of a police officer. But you don't have to get to the legality of Mr. Fox's arrest because Mrs. Fox has not shown that any clearly established right was violated by Officer Boyd's very minimal intrusion in this case.
Let me just be clear. Here's my one question, and then if we were to determine that the arrest was clearly unconstitutional,
it wouldn't make a difference.
Then,
he was still.
Isn't it pretty well established that that you don't have authority to haul others out and put them against a car or against a wall if the arrest itself is unconstitutional? Your authority to control the scene for an arrest is for a lawful arrest under Supreme Court precedent.
Yes, but the question is whether a reasonable officer in the position of Officer Boyd could have reasonably believed that Mr. Fox was properly detained. Clearly his car was parked in violation of traffic
regulations. That's not clear from the complaint either.
Well, I read the complaint that is, he cannot possibly suggest any other scenario that, he moved it to a perfectly fine place because I don't think there is anything around there in any case.
You're saying you think, but you don't.
No, the complaint does not plausibly suggest anything. It's plausibly suggests that he was stopped right in his tracks when he turned his engine on, and the.
You
I
would
think
agree
it's,
that those a lot of inferences from
well,
a complaint,
but
correct?
It's her burden of showing.
That's why I asked you, on a 1983, is Mrs. Fox entitled to the reasonable inferences?
Is she entitled to what?
Is she entitled to the reasonable inferences from the complaint?
Yes, but she has a burden of
I understand, but I'm still back in the facts.
Right? I think,
I don't think we're disagreeing candidly
fairly
on these legal principles that the Supreme Court has established. We're just trying to find out if they are applicable under these facts.
Well,
and isn't that the critical issue here? Is this an appropriate case for judgment on the pleadings?
Well, she has the burden of producing a complaint that plausibly suggests that Officer Boyd violated her clearly established constitutional rights. That
right.
is her
so
burden.
She's arguing that she was asking a legitimate question. She got no answer. She got an abrupt statement to shut up.
Yes.
And she was told or she'd be arrested.
Yes.
She started to cry. And he told her to get out of the car and put her hands on the roof. That's her situation.
But we believe that under the circumstances.
And we don't know from this complaint exactly what Officer Boyd knew when he arrived on the scene, other than that Squires told him Mr. Fox had an attitude problem. And at that point, he puts Mr. Fox in handcuffs.
Well, a reasonable officer coming to the scene like Officer Boyd would have realized that there was a traffic violation.
Maybe he wouldn't.
Well,
that's just not in the complaint.
Well, you have to assume that the officer has his eyes open.
Answer my question about who gets the reasonable inferences here.
Well, she has the burden under Iqbal Twobly of putting forth a plausible set of facts in her allegations that would allow.
Reasonably viewed from her perspective.
Yes.
Right? You agree with that?
I just couldn't hear you.
Reasonably viewed from her perspective, correct?
Yes.
All right. And you've been citing a lot of authority for these arrest cases where it's the reasonable officer. And I'm just trying to see how these two lines of authority come together.
Well, qualified immunity, of course, is judged from the point of view of a reasonable officer. I mean, motivation. I think Mrs. Fox spent a lot of time about the motives of Officer Squire, but those are really irrelevant. The question is whether a reasonable officer in Officer Boyd's position coming to the scene would have violated her clearly established constitutional rights with a very minimal intrusion. There was no physical conduct. He didn't even ask for identification. He said, get out of the car and put your hands on the hood so I can see them. I think we've cited a Third Circuit case where an officer had a passenger put his hands up in the air, and that was perfectly okay under the Third Circuit. Now, again, against all these cases we cite, there's not a single case cited by the Mrs. Fox for the clearly established rights. Her opening brief doesn't mention it at all, and I think that's – you can't raise arguments for the first time in a reply brief. And anyway, if you look at a reply brief, all she talks is in generalities. There's no specific case dealing with the particular type of conduct that Officer Boyd engaged in his very temporary detention of Mrs. Fox. And it's given the obligation of Mrs. Fox to state a complaint that plausibly gives you a basis for inferring that clearly established constitutional rights were violated. It just isn't here. During the entire proceeding, including the reply brief, she hasn't cited a single case that has anything close to the facts of this case. And we believe that the district court correctly held that Mrs. Fox failed to prove that Officer Boyd violated her clearly established constitutional rights and that the court should be affirmed.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Counsel for appellant, do you want a minute or so?
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd just like to address the failure to comply argument the counsel made. First of all, it's worth noting that the defendants in this case made this point before Judge Jackson.
I'm not sure what you're addressing exactly.
I'm sorry. Counsel argued that the officers had a constitutional arrest under failure to comply with the lawful order of a police officer.
I misunderstood what you said.
Yes, sir. The defendants reached this point or made this point in their judgment on the pleadings papers. And Judge Jackson, if you look at the appendix, pages 101 to 102, addressed those and in summary basically said there's not enough facts in the pleadings to reach a disposition on that point, and so therefore it's not appropriate to grant that motion on that point now until further factual development has been made through discovery. So now that Officer Boyd is asking this court to reach a decision on the merits of that argument when the finder of fact found that there were insufficient facts to do so. And I think that's improper and certainly a good reason why this court should remand the case to the district court for further factual development.
All right. Thank you. We'll take the case under advisement.